in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today we speak with writer, artist, designer John Hickman. Last year, John was responsible for one of the freshest designs and narratives in comic books with his series from Image, The Nightly News. John's unique take on comics continues this year in three series from Image. Pax Romana, a what-if scenario where scientists from the future go back to recreate history and correct the errors of men. There's his look on man's quest for the utopian society in Red Mass from Mars, his interplanetary galactic war for Top Cow's pilot season called The Core, and Transhuman, a not-too-distant future where science, pharmaceuticals, and the dreams of man's potential are combined. A big announcement came at the end of this summer. Brian Bendis announced that his collaborator for the new Marvel series Secret Warriors, coming out of the Secret Invasion, will feature John Hickman as a co-writer. We talk about all of that in this edition of Word Balloon. But we start things off with a look at his book, Transhuman.
You know, if you haven't picked up the book before, you don't know what it's about. It's kind of a documentary fill slash mockumentary story about the corporate wars with genetic engineering and, you know, cybernetics and robotics and all that kind of stuff, enhancing humanity. And it's kind of a first-person interview where you get the touch on each character from, you know, different points throughout the story, you know, and it goes over like a 20-year period of time, I'm pretty sure. And issue three kind of wraps up the end of the marketing section. You know, the first issue was Discovery, and the second issue was about initial public offering and getting funding and that kind of stuff. And then this third issue was the marketing war, you know, who would and who would not win and why. And the fourth issue is kind of a recap of 10 years later, kind of look back at how stuff.
How the drug has affected the society? Or the drug, yeah, well, the treatments and everything, really? Because
it's beyond drugs,
obviously. It's cybernetics as well. And
yeah, it's really more about what happened to the characters. You
okay.
Know what I mean? I'm kind of taking the position that this stuff is inevitable, and these are just the people that got sucked up into it, and this is kind of their story. So it's an interesting book. I mean, if you haven't gotten issue one or two, you're probably not going to be able to follow issue three because I'm not doing, you know, anything recap, and I'm not dumbing it down at the beginning of the book or anything like that, so that, you know, it's easy for new people to pick it up. I'd wait for the trade, but
okay.
if you're following along, it's you know, it's the next little installment on that. So,
well, I'm enjoying it because I think it as you say, in this era of Viagra, Levitra, so many of the other ridiculous products that are being, you know, really thrown at society through commercials, maybe it is kind of an inevitability that beyond fixing your ailments, that, you know, the promise of evolution to the next, you know, human level is being offered by these companies. And you give the corporate perspective, and I think that's, you know, fertile ground where, you know, there hasn't been a lot of stories in terms of, you know, the business end of this thing. And I mean, there's certainly nods to the X-Men and the idea of human evolution. But, like, you know, this is a very crass, real-world kind of look at some of the byproducts of these kinds of developments.
Yeah, it's really kind of a riff off of, you know, the Microsoft-Apple PC war kind
okay.
of deal. And, it you know, the Revenge of the Nerds little Robert X. Cringely series that he did. It's really more of a riff on that kind of stuff. And you know, my position is that the drug companies, you know, developed all this technology just like Xerox did back in the day, but they blew it because they were too busy selling, you know,
copy machines.
Yeah, well, yeah, and too busy selling drugs that they could continue to push to people that were sick for a long period of time instead of making people that could live a very long time. I mean, really, I mean, think about it. Why in the world would a drug company, if they had two equal drugs that offered the same solution, one was a one-time cure and one was one that you would have to take for the rest of your life, even though the one-time cure is the better product, the drug company is obviously going to offer the one that you're going to have to take forever because
sure.
you're now a customer. So.
Yeah, built-in profits that keep turning over each time they need a new treatment.
Well, you know, they have a board to answer to, John, so you can't think too badly of them.
Well, and now the story hasn't gone into the third world issue of a situation like that, because you know, and granted, again, the drug companies, I always want to bring in the real world when I'm talking to you, John, because it's pretty obvious that you're staying observant of what's really happening with the real world players that you put into your stories. So, I mean, is that going to figure into
transhuman? There's a company that buys a couple of nations in issue four.
Okay.
Which is kind of funny, because you remember when Microsoft was being sued by the government, they actually had they leaked my best friend actually clerked for the judge that was doing that case.
Wow.
I obviously wasn't privy to any inside stuff, because he's an ethical guy.
Sure.
But, you know, when it was over, obviously I heard, you know, some really, you know, amazing stories. And, you know, one of the things that got leaked in the middle of that trial was that Microsoft had a plan to move their whole company offshore and, buy a small island and move the whole deal, you know, everything Microsoft offshore. And, obviously that was a smokescreen thing, because they would have, you know, what they would have gained in
legal freedom.
Yeah, the impunity to act however
right.
they wanted. They
right.
would have lost in a PR kind of situation, and then obviously our congressional, you know, individuals would have gotten involved at that point and probably just tear us the full out of them. So, but that, you know, that's kind of gets played with in issue four. So.
Very cool. There's now that you say that, I did sense, and I didn't want to go there, but now that you brought it up, that film that TNT made about Apple and Microsoft, Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's all based on all the Robert Cringely PBS stuff. I mean,
okay.
That's one of the big sources for that.
So. Oh, sure. I'm going to go to the made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
Because it's quick and it has commercials.
Resist. Yeah, you can't resist Anthony Michael Hall.
As Bill Gates, that's right.
So.
Too much of it. Actually, I like the guy from ER,
Noah Wiley.
That's Steve
Jobs. Yeah, Steve Jobs actually brought him out on stage whenever they did one of the Mac cons or whatever.
That's hilarious.
After that came out.
That's very funny. Now, that's a great, you know, it took forever for that thing to get on DVD, and maybe because they used a lot of source music and hits to bring out, to kind of set up the time period that they were dealing in. But damn, that was such a good made-for-TV movie.
It came out pretty good. Those documentaries are amazing. You actually cannot buy the internet one anymore. That was about the rise of the .com, you know, the whole .com bit.
Sure.
And
sure.
And you know, it followed Andreessen, and it followed Cisco, and it followed Oracle. I mean, it did. Sun with McNeely and those guys, and Bill Joy. But it was you can't buy that anymore, because it's kind of like one of those documentaries that became, you know, horribly dated and just erroneous because of the kind of the bust that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that one is just as fascinating as the original one. So
wow.
So if you can find that out there, those are definitely worth watching, and you will see how I stole liberally from those. And I'm so not ashamed of it, I'm telling you about it. So.
How many issues are Transhuman going to be?
It's just four.
Okay.
Four.
Oh, so the wind-up coming up? Okay.
Yeah. Everything that I'm doing at Image right now is all four-issue kind of minis. I don't know what I would do if I was doing six-issue minis right now.
Okay.
On all three of these series, because I obviously bit off a bit much. I wasn't expecting to get, you know, work from Marvel in the interim. And, you know, you can't turn that down. I wasn't expecting to do the Top Cow thing. And, you know, it's just, I've got a lot of work, and I finally can see the end, you know, right around the corner. I'm wrapping all this stuff up, so I'm really happy about that. I'm happy with the work, obviously, but, it's good to almost be done with those things. So
I can appreciate that. And as you say, you know, what do you do when you're doing your own creator-owned stuff, when you're relying on the back end? And a company does come by and offers you, you know, paychecks up front for each month, you know, you deliver work and everything, so.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm getting saddled with shitty gigs either from Marvel.
No, this is going to be great. We're going to talk about your collaboration with Bendis coming up. And also, I do want to talk about Top Cow and the Core, the pilot season issue that you did. But
sure.
Pax Romana, I'm a huge time travel fan. And I think
me
this,
too.
Obviously. Because I think you've really found a fresh approach to this, and the wish fulfillment of we have the technology, we can go back and really fix society. And God, I really am knocked out by this story. And it's, I guess, the third issue is coming out soon?
Yeah, the third issue's done. You get that. You saw that.
Yes, I did.
But that's at the that's at press right now, and that should be out in, I guess, two weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. I don't know how that stuff works once it gets to Image. It seems to be about a month after you turn it in. I turned it in last week, so...
You mentioned there's going to be a issue one and two.
Yeah, they're doing a little combo thing where they're doing like a 56-page combo of issues one and two. You know, because it's been so long since the second issue came out. My fault, I know. You know, it's. I'm proud of that book. I think that turned out really, really well, and I like that people are responding to it well, and I like that. I like that the subject matter is broad but really sharp, and you know, that's the kind of story I like to tell. If I'm going to tell creator-owned books, this, that kind of density and that kind of story is the kind of thing that I want to do. And that series is gonna end in a not it. I mean, it and it's got a great ending, but it's got a kind of an open ending where I can go back in and revisit that if I want to. I mean, there's so many stories that you can. I mean, I you know, I'm rewriting history, so there's nothing I really can't do. So.
Exactly, there's a new blank slate for you to kind of go back and rewrite history.
Well, you can always tell the kind of ego that a creator has if they do something ridiculous like that.
Well, for people who don't know, it's set in the future, and it's a time where, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but the Catholic Church has discovered the ability for time travel through their own science arms in the future, and have assembled an army to go back in time and correct history, going back to the time of the original Roman Empire, and addressing a lot of issues to, again, you know, kind of correct society's path and maybe avoid some of the wars, the conflicts, and the problems that have just come up through different philosophies. And, I mean, God, the whole issue, and I'm assuming that's the one to come, that really gets into the threads of Christianity and where is its position in the Roman Empire in this new realigned history. That just blew my mind. I thought that was fantastic.
Well, I mean, it's...
Am I spoiling by talking about this?
No. I mean, I'm not... we'll be vague enough. I'll start yelling if you get stuff away.
All right, very good. please do.
No, I mean, the thing about it is the thing I like about the book is everybody has the best intentions throughout the entire thing.
Yep.
You know, it's not based on, you know, oh, the Pope is assembled an army to go back in time and straighten out the heathen, you know, which would be horrible fiction, and or you know, to get even with the Muslims that have kind of overrun the Western Europe and in the future that they come from. It's a smart book. It's a smart book. I'm happy with it. So, the thing about it is, you know, I'm cheating a lot in that book too. I mean, it probably should be longer. If you notice, I kind of cut away from like the big action moments. And that's just an economy of space that I have to do.
Okay.
And that I chose to do it in four issues. I certainly, you know, wanted to show, you know, the big battle, the big first battle where they take out all two legions and two different fighting legions. And, you know, I want to show...
with a couple choppers and a couple tanks and, you know...
They only need. it would have been ridiculous to only have like three sniper teams or something like that. That would have been over the top. But you know, you can imagine the kind of ridiculous mismatch that would happen if it was like a Cobra helicopter versus, you know, 50 guys on horses or something like that. It'd be an excellent video game, as it would be.
Did you ever see? It was kind of in that crappy period of Saturday Night Live when Kirk Douglas was the host. And it was near the end when it was still a lot of the original actors. You know, Bill Murray was still part of it, and half of the Not Ready for Primetime players were still around. But it was a what-if scenario of what if Spartacus had a Piper Cub plane? And it was the most ridiculous thing, and Bill Murray played just a little, you know, airplane pilot with Spartacus, and they literally are just throwing crap on top of, like, these legionnaires. And the whole time Spartacus is just like, this is great. God, this is fantastic.
I haven't ever seen that, John. I'm sure I would have loved it when I was three.
Exactly. All right, there you go. That's why I'm 10 years older than you, man. I understand. But, no, really, I mean, that is the kind of, like, crazy, like, bizarre idea that came to mind when I first read this. And then your style is interesting as far as storytelling, and it's I can already hear people in the comic shop saying, you know, wow, there's so many words, man, and if I wanted to read these many words, I would have bought a book. But I think they're kind of, you know, for those people, I think they're kind of missing the boat, because, as you say, what you don't show in action, you do spend a lot of time on a lot of conversation, and there are some really amazing discussions about, you know, what the direction that this, you know, realigned history is going into. Do we have the right to change these things? And there's a lot of drama there. I mean, that's the thing. So for the lack of what you might not show in action, which is still represented in a few images, as you say, I think you more than make up for some pretty intense dialogue between all these characters. And I'm all for the idea, too, that, you know, there should be no rules in how things are presented in a comic book. And I like the fact that what you do in design breaks the traditional rules. And again, it's there's a lot of text with the pictures that you provide.
Yeah, I think on average, one of the issues of Pax Romana has about 3,500 to 4,000 words. You know, in like scripts that I've turned in for corporate work, or even like an issue of Red Mass, you know, which is a little bit more, was obviously a lot more action-y.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only have about 1,000, 1,200 or something like that.
Okay.
So you're looking at a volume of just an amazing amount more, I guess. What is that? I mean, that's 3,000 more words.
Right.
That's roughly, that would be an 80-page comic if you told it in a normal kind of very linear, very decompressed, or, you know, regular paced. And, you know, I feel like I'm giving people their money's worth on something like Pax Romana. I feel like, obviously, I'm cheating a little bit in that I don't show some of the stuff that's implied. But again, you know, a lot of that, John, is economic, in that I've made a decision that I'm doing 4-issue series because I know that I can make money on all 4 issues, and I can turn around and collect the trade and expand it out a little bit. And, you know, it's just the thing that makes the most sense. You know, I mean, all of those things are kind of factored into it, and I would like to think that I'm getting away with it in such a manner that I'm not hurting the story too much. But, you know, that's independent publishing.
Absolutely. And I appreciate the themes that are being discussed here, and I think you do it in a way that it does fit in a comic book. The choices that you make, as you say, I think makes for more dense reading. And
I think issue one is like a kind of call to arms. What's the purpose of what they're doing? And issue two is really the big talk about what is good and what is right from a religious and a spiritual standpoint. You know, what is our moral obligation to what we're talking about doing? And issue three is really more about what kind of government it would take to create a society that is the greatest society in the history of the world, taking place in 300 AD, you know, and issue four is obviously the consequences of all that, and I just think that those discussions are, I don't think that they're cheap, and I think that they're pretty well thought out, and I'm happy with the language, and I feel like, you know, when I started the book, I really could have, generally, I could care less about, well, when I'm thinking of what a good idea for a comic is, I'm not really thinking about the end user or a fan, I guess.
Sure.
is the right phrase to use. Whenever I'm thinking about doing a book, I'm thinking about doing something that means a lot to me, or a book that I want to work on, a story that I want to tell. And then maybe if it's appropriate and the timing is right, it seems like it'll be, you know, something that would mean a lot to other people. you know, and if the time isn't right when it comes out, maybe the book won't do as well, but it'll find its niche later on. But it seems like, and it was true with the Nightly News, it seemed like the book hit at a really good time, you know, for the kind of a good bit of frustration or a good bit of people being interested in the subject matter. And, you know, we live in a culture right now that is extremely conflicted when it comes to matters of philosophy versus science, and those are the arguments that we're making. So I think that's one of the reasons why people are responding really well to Pax Romana.
Well, I know a lot of people are, they can't wait for issue 3, and it's I'm glad to hear that it's at the printers and it'll be coming out soon for everyone else to enjoy. I enjoyed the PDF, and I'm up to speed on it, and I know everyone is going to enjoy issue 3, and I'm sure they'll be chomping at the bit for 4. And really, you are amassing a nice little stack of when they are finally collected and into trades, John. I think you're positioning yourself well that when people start to read your Marvel work and they're going to want to read more stuff, they're going to have some pretty interesting books to look at. And one of them is Red Mass from Mars. Where are we at on that?
Ryan is finished with the art already for issue 3, so I'm going to be able to turn right around and color that and letter it and send it out. And I think Red Mass is going to pretty much be on schedule. And Transhumans done pretty good staying on schedule. I just had a real tough decision to make there, John, where I had collaborators on Transhuman and Red Mass, and Pax was all me. And
yep.
At some point, I'm an ass if I don't put their books forward, you know, at the forefront. So. But Red Mass is a nice book. It's the first superhero thing that I ever wrote. Obviously, I'm writing some other stuff now in addition to that. But it's a book I'm proud of, man. I'm pretty pleased with everything that I'm doing. Red Mass is a really pretty book, that's for sure.
Absolutely. No, I had the pleasure of talking to Ryan in Chicago, and looking over the book with him and. I also enjoy the artist that you've got for Transhuman. I don't want to
No, JM's awesome. Yeah, JM is perfect for that book, no doubt about it.
So, but for the story of Red Mass, this is kind of your de facto Superman. I mean, a Superman, if, you know. And it basically asks the question, what happens when humanity kind of reaches an evolutionary point when they're about to meet their gods, and in this case, the superhero as gods? Is that a fair kind of lofty look at what the book's about?
Yeah, the book's really about man's evolving idea of what utopia has been over time. And that goes from, you know, believing in the afterlife and being with God because life was really, really hard, which is issue 1. And issue 2 is about liberty when man abandons God and finds freedom for himself. And issue 3 is about, how some men are freer than others, and what we really strive for is equality. And then issue 4 is the logical conclusion of that. And if you've studied your modern philosophy, you know the answer. If you haven't, well, then issue 4 will be out soon. So, it's an examination of it asks the opposite question that a lot of, you know, Superman archetype books ask. You know, what if he didn't do anything? You know, what if he was a passive, you know, agent? You know, what if humanity had to do it by itself, even when there was, you know, this demigod sitting there that could do everything and he chose not to? It's the Superman as devil's advocate kind of position, I guess. So.
Okay, and you know, humanity finally is able to descend on his metaphorical fortress of solitude and approach him. And ask that question, why haven't you acted? Why, you know, where have you been? And maybe beyond that, maybe we don't need you anymore.
Yeah, all of those questions are asked and answered. And, I think it's, it really, John, it is actually the same book as Pax Romana. You know, they're both about building a greater society. Both
okay.
of those books are. They just go in about it in different ways. And they're really asking the same question. And one is kind of asked in a fanboy way, and the other one is asked in kind of a philosophical science way. And maybe the answer is the same in both. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I really haven't I really haven't made up my mind about how Red Master Mars is going to end yet. I mean, I know what the ending probably will be, but I may change my mind. So we'll see. I will say that the thing that I am personally proudest of on Red Master is I colored that book, and
that's cool.
And that the coloring on that book is the kind of risk-taking and kind of experimental stuff that I would like to see more of in comic coloring. You know, it's kind of it's got a digital look, but it's also got the painterly looking backgrounds mm-hmm. and all that. And I have found myself, as projects have gotten more and more out of my personal control, because obviously with the Nightly News and PAX, I was able to control everything because I did everything, and I was
yes.
pretty much able to control Transhuman and Red Mass as well, since I was putting the books together, and I'm a snob about that stuff, and so I have opinions, and I felt strongly about how those books should look. But obviously, working with stuff with Marvel now and doing stuff with Top Cow, you don't have that kind of control. As a matter of fact, you don't have much at all. And I found that the thing that I am most sensitive about over everything else, over lettering, over even the artist pencils or line art or whatever you want to call it, I found that color is the most consequential thing in modern comics, because you can print the books at such a high quality now, and the paper's pretty good quality, that you don't have to worry about stuff like plate shifts anymore because they're printing on really good presses.
Sure.
Really, the color completely makes a book now, in my opinion. It can make up for mediocre penciling, but it can absolutely butcher great penciling.
I hear you.
There's been plenty of examples of that recently. And it's just to me, it's become one of the most, if not the most important thing. And I'm really, really, in that vein, I'm really, really proud of Red Mass. I think it accomplishes color-wise what I set out to do in a pretty different and spectacular way. I'm really happy with that.
How do you learn the philosophy behind how you want something colored? I mean, where are you finding, your references and ideas for coloring?
You mean color theory-wise, or you mean just...
The choices.
Deciding to do something different.
Yeah, well, the choices that you make. I mean, it's... how do you know what color constitutes the kind of mood that you're, I'm just asking as a total knucklehead layman, where do you go for your ideas for coloring?
The idea for how to do Red Mass was just kind of an inspiration thing. I mean, I wanted to marry analog and digital coloring techniques.
Okay.
I wanted something that looked painterly in some places but looked digital in others. And that includes... color layers where I'm changing the base color of an entire panel, and I'm playing around with that, and it just came from a place of pure experimentation, and because people were so cool about me trying that stuff on the Nightly News, I'm pretty emboldened to go for it, and there's been lots of books out there recently that have been trying to do some different stuff color wise and how the book is produced. I mean, obviously David Mack is always doing that kind of stuff, but
sure.
Hawaiian Dick, the coloring on Hawaiian
Steve
Dick.
Steve Griffin, was, absolutely.
Yeah. Was something that I looked at and I was like, Jesus, I don't understand why people don't try more of this. So, just wanting to experiment. I hope I never stop doing that.
Do you have any friends that are, comic colorists that you've even consulted, or are there?
I don't know anybody in comics. I mean, I've this is only, November will be my second year in the business.
Okay.
So, I a year ago I didn't know anyone because I had only gone to, one con? That was San Diego, and I met people there, right?
2007 was your first San Diego?
When we met in San Diego,
yes.
That was my first time, yeah.
Crazy, okay.
And obviously I met people there, and that was cool and very nice. And then I go to Heroes every year, which is Charlotte, but my
sure.
first year I went, I didn't really know anyone. That I got to know Fraction a little bit then.
Okay.
And I know Kirkman a little bit, and you know, obviously I've gotten to know Brian Bendis. But other than that, you know, the people that I work with, I don't really know that many people in the business. You know, that's something that I'm really looking forward to. I mean, I have no connections, really.
Well, and I know that your background was Comic Book Idol winning. We discussed that in our first interview.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
I should say coming in second in Comic Book Idol.
Yeah, that's true. Scherberger smashed me. Well, God bless him. He's a deserved winner. But I still, you know, that's the downside of you know, electronic publishing. Is you don't have to ever leave your house. You know, and so and I just haven't gotten the chance to do a whole bunch of cons and stuff like that, and so I'm looking forward to, you know, really getting to meet and know a bunch of people. But in the colorist area, I don't know anybody.
Okay. I mean, I know there have been so many, as you say, breakthroughs in the quality of paper, but also, yeah, the things that you know, CrossGen, I know it's one lasting contribution has been the changes, I think, in coloring that you've seen. Both realistically and abstract use of color. And again, as someone who is not an artist, I'm always wondering, you know, where, you know, I like what I see, but I'm not sure how the artist arrives at those choices. So I'm always sure. Curious as to, you know, where their ideas come from.
Well, apparently a lot of the colorists are overextended as well.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, especially the big guys. And so I'm sure that has a big effect on quality of work as well. I don't know. I'm looking forward to learning more about that. So we'll see. I know I have my opinions, and I know how the process works, and I understand all the technical aspects, and you know, we'll see. I'm sure I'll have more thoughts on that at a later time.
So. Well, before we get to Marvel, we should talk about Top Cow and pilot season, because you were involved in their second wave pilot season.
Sure.
And with a lot of my other favorite writers.
There's some good guys in there.
Big, yeah. Josh Fialkoff fan, big Jay Farber fan, and a big John Hickman fan, for example, and those three right off the bat.
Sure.
So
sure.
Tell me.
Yeah, I met Joshua in San Diego that year when we went, and he was a very nice guy.
Yeah.
I do like his work, and I haven't picked up all the books, but I think I've gotten like four of them. And yeah, they're all good. They're all good. I mean, I don't think there's much suck there at all. I think everybody kind of brought it. And
Matt Hawkins did a fine job, and I'm forgetting who did Twilight Guardian.
The other Hickman, Troy.
Troy Hickman, of course.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Of course. So yeah, Troy Hickman, Matt Hawkins, yourself, Josh, and Jay. And that's, you know, that was a good crop of books. Tell me about the core. Now, was that your idea, or was that presented?
No, that was my idea.
Okay.
They asked me to pitch. Matt and Rob have asked me to pitch a couple of things at Top Cow, and I was just so busy I didn't have time to. And then I kind of came up with this idea for a book, I don't know, like in December or something like that. And I knew it was, they had asked me to pitch for pilot season, and I had missed the cutoff for that, and I'd send it to them, and they liked the idea. And we were going to talk about doing it sometime, you know, late 2008 maybe, or maybe even 2009, and they just kept, you know, floating it around the office, and they just wanted to push it up and make a pilot season book out of it. And I, of course, was like, sure, yeah, that sounds good, let's do that. And I got Kenneth Rocaforth on art, and my God, he's amazing, amazing artist. He's got this perfect blend of kind of superhero-y art with this concept art kind of look, and he's going to be big time in about 3 or 4 years, man. You wait.
Very cool.
Oh, he's just going to be huge. And
what's the picture on the core? Why don't you?
It's the center of the universe as an allegory for the Middle East. And so you've got all these different cultures that have owned the same, some parts of the center of the universe over its history. And obviously it's a point of contention, and the center of the universe is resource poor. And so they're expanding out to gain more resources. And we have frozen gas giants in our outer system. And that's a source of usable material, and the Earth gets annexed, and one of our dudes makes the cut and join in like a alien special forces thing. It's kind of like the Unit meets that. Remember that old book at Alien Legion?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like the Unit meets Alien Legion. It's what it is.
So, okay.
And it if we win, if we make the cut, the book changes radically in the second issue. The first, I really cheated. We were supposed to do one and done issues, and
okay. And
I really gave an issue full of setup. So if people reject the book or we don't win, it's entirely my fault. but it was a gamble that I felt like I could make because Kenneth was so awesome on the art. But if we do, what you'll see is everything that I set up in the first issue is just there's like 15 different little plot threads that I laid in there that are just going to, all fly apart and then whip back together at the end. And if you would like to see that, you'll have to go vote for it.
Man, I'm telling you, Top Cow has really impressed me because I always, I got to be honest, the initial runs of The Darkness and Witchblade had some great artists and wonderful writers, but it just didn't appeal to me. And I have to say the product in the last 3 years, especially, or 4 years, have really made me take notice. And I'm reading a lot more Top Cow than I ever have before. And it's because they've gotten great writers and great artists and even retooled The Darkness and Witchblade and given them fresher spins. And I can honestly say that they have a lot of books that I'm really enjoying.
Well, that's just, this is purely conjecture, but I'm operating under the assumption is that they're operating with their eyes firmly on other media as well as comics. I mean, of course, they want to produce great comics, but if you create great comics and you have actual viable other properties in media, and I know this is hot button stuff for everyone, you should just do comics because you love comics, but that's a little naive, and I think they understand that if they're only making books that are tits for the fanboys, then that's not a real product. And Matt Hawkins is a smart guy, and I think he's pretty on top of things. So I think they know what they're doing over there, and I think they have a plan. I think they're executing against it like any good company would. So,
I'm assuming then that the Corps has its own MySpace page for voting on pilot season, or do you go to MySpace?
I think you just go to the pilot season page, or you go to the Top Cow page, or you go to the Top Cow website, or any number of places where they've seated, little voting. I don't even know what those things are, little Java applets or some kind of antiquated technology to make sure you can't pile on the votes. I don't think anybody's cracked the code on how to cheat on Top Cow yet, but if you know.
they didn't go to Chicago to get the voting done, or else it would be like that. No problem. We need the right alderman, man.
Well, you guys get it done right.
Exactly.
Alive or dead, win the game.
I was going to say, we let the dead vote. That's how progressive we are. We even let the dead vote. So, well, let's talk about Nick Fury. And it's Nick Fury Secret Warriors.
It's Secret Warriors.
Oh, it is just called Secret Warriors?
It is called Secret Warriors.
Okay. Yeah. Now, being an old Nick Fury fan, I've always loved the core group of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s people. Brian has created this group of young heroes and some the progeny of supervillains that Nick has assembled for the purposes of Secret Invasion. And it was always kind of almost a doomsday scenario that he had these files and amassed this team. Am I right so far?
Yeah, you're right so far.
Okay. And they made their debut now in Secret Invasion. Are we going to see them through the end of Secret Invasion? Is there still more for them to do? Or as we're talking, Secret Invasion number 5 has come out, and that's the last we've seen of them. Now, are they going to be in 6, 7, and 8 as well?
Well, I've read 6, 7, and 8, and there's a lot going on.
Okay.
Obviously, they are in. Some of those guys make it through, and some of them are in the new book. And obviously, Nick Fury is.
Okay.
So I hope I'm not ruining anything there. But yeah, I mean, I can't really speak to the end of Secret Invasion.
Oh, no, I understand.
But our book is it's really going to be kind of like a. Goodness, what's the best way to describe it? It's almost like a spy book with a superhero patina. We're getting to do the black ops, the double and triple agents, and we're really going to get to do it instead of it being like every so often in a couple of issues in a big, in a superhero book, we're going to get to do a book that's nothing but that. And, you know, that's right up mine and Brian's alley, and we feel really strongly about it. And, you know, John, I'm not a big I've listened to a bunch of podcasts and obviously read a bunch of press by certain writers, and you know, I'm not a big hyperbole guy. You know, I'm not gonna say that, you know, we're gonna sell 500 million copies or you know, you'll die if you don't read this book. But I feel comfortable in saying that this is probably gonna be the best Marvel book ever.
Well, that's good. I know people have been waiting a long time for Brian's name on an ongoing Nick Fury book. And I like what Marvel is doing in terms of these writing partner arrangements, because I think it's giving people their favorite writers on more titles. And then also it kind of provides a framework for the writer they may not know as well to you know, continue in the flavor of the book that they've enjoyed so far. And I've enjoyed the Fraction Brubaker team up.
Sure.
And I
apparently I'm on the Fraction plan is what I've heard.
That's it.
So we'll see if
the Remender plan as well, apparently.
That's exactly right. We'll see if this is a formula they can replicate. If so, watch out. Bendis and Brubaker are going to be writing everything.
Well, how was this team formed? You and Brian.
Well, Brian's been really, really nice. Still haven't met Brian, but we've talked a ton now. But you know, Brian was early on. He was big proponent of the Nightly News.
Yes, absolutely.
And he certainly has been. You know, good Lord, how many times have you talked to him, or has he given some other interview where he talked about me? You know, and somebody to watch out for, and that kind of thing. And,
yeah.
You know, I obviously didn't have to do any of that, and it was very generous of him. And, you know, I'd shoot him an email from time to time saying, hey, maybe we should do this, and maybe we should do that. And one day, I got a kind of a cryptic email out of the blue from him. And it was like, hey, listen, I think I got a gig for you. And he sent me the script and the art for that Alex Maleev issue of Nick Fury, where they gathered all the Secret Warriors kids together.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I emailed him back and said, oh dear God, yes, I would kill this. and it kind of flew off from there. Obviously, Tom Brevoort had a lot to do with it. You know, they were telling Brian that he just had too much work to do, and there was no way he's going to be able to do all the books that he had planned to do that are coming out of Secret Invasion, or that were continuing out of Secret Invasion. And Tom said, well, you've been running your mouth about Jonathan, so why don't we give him a shot? And so I had that, you know, when you got Brevoort supporting you and Brian supporting you, it was kind of a done deal. So
that's cool. Brevoort a big fan of Nightly News as well, or
I don't know. I know he's a big fan of giving me a shot, and
that's cool.
I don't know. I've never asked. So do you like my other work? I didn't want to open the door for an examination. Yeah, for an examination of whether or not I was any good.
Frankly, but, no.
Yeah, I know. You should be working at DC.
So
I don't know what you're doing in the building.
What's the difference then of co-writing with Brian for Marvel as opposed to really just, you know, doing your own thing?
let's see. I think we both think we're right all the time.
Okay.
I think he thinks he deserves to be more right. I think he knows what he's doing a whole lot more than I do. Especially in terms of writing a corporate book. I mean, there are things that you just can and can't do. And
absolutely.
You know, and there are kind of doors you have to jump through, and if you want to get certain characters, and obviously that's all been a learning process. But Brian's been really good. You know, he's being really cool. He's kind of staying out of the way and letting me do the stuff I'm doing. He's letting me do my own thing, and you know, then commenting on it. It's been cool. I'm getting ready to start turning in scripts, so then I probably will have a much better idea of you know, how easy or hard it's going to be. But I mean, obviously, I'm a control freak, so I'm going to have to just have issues and deal with that. So.
Okay.
But it's awesome.
Well, that's cool.
it's a ridiculous gig that I have, you know, that I've been in the business 2 years and I'm getting a big launch from Marvel. It's ridiculous. You know, the only thing that I can do is try and knock it out of the park. So.
Have they announced an artist for you guys yet or no?
No, they haven't.
Okay.
And I'm not quite sure if it's firmed up yet. So.
Okay, no problem.
I can't really talk about that.
I respect that.
But we will have a good colorist.
Do you know who your colorist is?
No, I have no idea. Okay. But I'll go all in on that one.
That's cool. And you know, how does the partnership work? Is it going to be, you know, Brian plotting and your, you know?
Well, I've turned in a series Bible.
Okay.
That is basically a an abbreviated kind of like 2 year run.
Oh, okay.
List of all the characters that we're using. I went overboard. Brian made fun of me a little bit because I turned in like cover designs and stuff like that, you know, that I'm not getting paid for and that it's not really my input. But
I had a filler for the trades now.
I had opinions. And you know, I feel really, really good about where we're going. Now obviously there are things that'll happen. You know, there'll be summer events that we'll either participate in or won't participate in. My inclination and Brian's obviously is to participate and make sure it works with the story really well. But, you know, I want to tell a long story. I mean, I've done enough miniseries. I'm really interested right now in doing some real characterization and some real, you know, just really threading some beautiful plot stuff that we can just drop for a year and then pick back up. So, you know, as far as how it's going to work, again, I think I'll probably know better whenever I start turning in scripts, but right now it looks like we'll both be plotting and I'll kind of be scripting. So.
Okay. Now, you know, it's interesting. Were you going to say something then? I don't want to step on you if you had another thought you wanted to give.
No. Well,
let me ask you, as we're speaking, I just released my interview with Robert Kirkman. And he was talking about the transition of writing corporate comics. And one of the frustrations, for lack of a better word, is that he felt, I think, maybe because of the events, they impeded his ability to think in terms of a long run on a series. And I know you're just entering the fray, but I'm wondering if you had any, you know, thoughts on that. Are you mindful of, you know, making the characterization fit in whatever event may pop up? I mean, I'm sure, have you been involved in terms of knowing what events are coming up already that are, you know, on paper? I'm sure to a degree you have to be.
Well, I mean, I know how Secret Invasion ends and what's coming out of it.
Okay.
But, I mean, I knew that before I was probably supposed to. So,
okay.
You know, I mean, I haven't been invited to any writer's retreat or any kind of stuff like that. Obviously, I don't think I will for a while.
Sure.
As I need to turn in a script first.
there you go.
But I think that there are models for handling that kind of stuff. I think if you look at kind of what Brubaker did, where you play on the periphery of an event, you know what, let me say it like this. I've always played tons of sports, and I've always played team sports, and I don't have a problem being a cooperative member of an organization, you know, that has a single agenda and goal, and in this case it's moving comics and making Marvel the best company in the marketplace. So I'm not going to be a and I'm also just not a kid. I'm not going to be and I'm obviously not implying that anybody else is, but I'm not going to have an attitude where if I can't do it my way, I'm not going to do it at all. I know that that's self-serving, and it's not going to be it's not going to be good for anybody. So I just don't think I'm going to have trouble with that.
Okay.
So, and the other thing is, we're also the arena for Secret Warriors is the entire Marvel universe, and we're just kind of happening in the, you know, in the alleys and underground, and you know, we're everything that's going on is going on in the Marvel universe, and it affects us in every issue of Secret Warriors, but we're behind the scenes, and we're undercover and all of that kind of stuff. So,
so there won't be direct interaction with.
Oh no, I mean, we're gonna do. We'll have things where the team peeks their head out of the shadows, because, when I wrote what I thought who Nick Fury was and what his, what he did, he's a guy that makes moves with a goal in mind. You know, they're Secret Warriors is not going to be an ongoing series about a random number of occurrences that happen and calamitous adventures of a. Yahoo group of guys with guns and powers, and they're just going to off having adventures. That's not the point of the book at all. The book is about goals, setting goals and achieving them for a greater purpose. I mean, that's he's a planner. He always has been. I mean, he's not going to get out of bed, or he's not going to pick up his gun and use it unless he already knows what the outcome is going to be. I mean, that's Nick Fury, so that's kind of the deal. We will definitely be taking place. Interacting with major events and causing and coordinating, with what's going on and have be an active participant. I mean, I didn't mean to imply otherwise, but we're just not going to get caught on camera. How about that?
Well, that makes sense for a Black Ops group like this. And sure. I guess because of what may or may not happen in Secret Invasion, you really can't go into what S.H.I.E.L.D. agents might still be part of this story that you guys
absolutely
are not telling.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's too bad because again I like the idea of Nick
if you
Fury.
Like all the old stuff, you're gonna love some of the stuff that we're doing.
Well, I figure Nick Fury is always gonna be Nick Fury, and however he interacts with people, it doesn't have to always be Clay Quartermain or Gabe Jones or Dub Duggan for that matter. I just always love those guys. But then by the same token, we've had so many years of continuity of bringing back S.H.I.E.L.D. as it was. And very good creative teams trying to extend the story. And, maybe it is time for something completely fresh. And I think that has been one of the fun wrinkles of Secret Invasion is, really cutting Nick Fury loose from that, wonderful organization and helicarrier that he always had to rely on with few exceptions.
Brian did a really smart thing when he took him off the stage a couple of years ago at the end of Secret War. I mean, that was a smart move. So he's built anticipation, and people are going to be looking forward to the book. I can't answer any questions about, what periphery, what's going on.
Sure.
But, the table is set for a phenomenal story. The problem with Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. in general is they always usually act in the comics as a call to action or either a deus ex machina, where they either start the conflict or they miraculously solve the conflict.
Sure.
And if you look at almost all of how S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been used the last 10 or 15 years, that's the vast majority of what's been going on, and that's bad. I mean, that's not really.
Well, it's not storytelling. It's an event. It's a moment in a story.
That's exactly right. And again, if you're talking about guys that are methodic, I mean, in Nick Fury, you're talking about the oldest living clandestine operative in the history of the world, right?
That's pretty much.
So I just don't see a guy like that being a read and react kind of guy. This is a guy that has everything planned out before he even steps out of the room. So that's our guy. And obviously the interesting part of it is not just what's going on with him, but what's going on with the kids. And, who sends kids into war, right?
Well, he's been doing it, as you say, for decades. So that's, I guess that kind of speaks to him. Are there runs of Furies that you've enjoyed as a reader?
Well, I read pretty much everything now. And you know how I feel about most of that old, where they had 8 pages to tell a story or 10 pages to tell a story. I think most of that writing was written. And they had to make sure that the new readers knew exactly what was going on before you got past page 2. And, I just think most of that stuff is really, really bad compared to the writing that we have in comics nowadays. And you know what? Kirkman had a good point about that, is that the reason why we have that kind of writing is because everybody already knows that stuff that's reading Marvel and DC books, right?
Sure.
But the benefit of that is that you don't have to tell simplistic stories, and that's a plus as far as this book goes. But as far as the old stuff. I mean, you know, obviously Steranko's stuff is a big deal. But, you know, the thing that I think is coolest about Steranko's stuff is all the little gadgetry that they had. I mean, we'll be using a bunch of that stuff again.
Very cool.
Because, you know, that's kind of spy stuff that we should be using. And
how about his page design, though, Rob, John? Because I see, whether it's there or not, I mean, you know, he was a pretty experimental guy in his time as far as page design goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you know, as someone who has come at things in an unorthodox way, have you know, kind of had any thoughts on how he laid out a page, and especially some of his pop art kind of influences and things.
Well, I mean, obviously he was pretty much ahead of his time. Yeah, I don't. We're not going to try and replicate any of that stuff.
No, but it just is another artist kind of seeing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's not the guy that you know, he was before my time. You know,
sure,
but
sure.
Obviously, the people that he influenced, and you know, Sienkiewicz and stuff like that, it had a huge influence on me. But looking back over all that stuff, he did some really cool things. There's no doubt about that. His cover gets ripped off a lot.
yes, you know, it does.
I swear to God, everybody's done that cover.
Pretty
we will
much.
Not. We will not do that cover.
That's good.
If we did that cover, it would only be if we were going to kill Nick Fury. So there you go. If you see that cover, then you know that Nick Fury dies.
Uh-oh.
That issue, so. But you know, I enjoyed looking through it. I think it's tough because, you know, if he would have had access to the printing stuff that we have nowadays, he would have been able to do even much more radical stuff. Because you can see the kind of intent that he had.
Oh, yeah.
And if he would have had access to that stuff, he really, really, really would have torn it up back then. So that's kind of a tragedy. You know, like the greatest computer programmer of all time being born in 1400 AD, you know, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but you also get, with him and Howard Chaykin, too, a guy that, you know, used the tools of their time and really came up with, you know, achieved things that would be simple today with Photoshop and did it when there was nothing.
Yeah,
and
no.
Kirby, too, for that matter. And that's, you know, there's something to be said, too, for, you know, creating the computer with some wood and some twine and stuff like that.
It's like old pop poster design. You know,
absolutely.
That stuff is incredible when you think about how they had to make it and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm a fan. I have trouble getting past the stories themselves. It's laborious to try and read through those things.
And were you a kid that grew up on comics, John, or no?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay.
Sure. But most of the stuff I grew up on was like right whenever they went to the 20 or 16 page story.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, I read Micronauts and X-Men, Dylan Byrne, and
healthily into the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, all that stuff.
So Michael Gould.
Neil Adams was just so huge when I started reading comics. So.
Well, that's a good place to start. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So
very cool, man. Well, what else can we talk about that we haven't covered? Have we covered that?
I think that's. I don't know. I mean, do we need to talk about any nightly news stuff? I mean, that trade's been around for a good little bit. I guess that went well.
I think it went very well. I'm a big fan of that book, and you know, we never did wrap up on it, but again, much like the three series that you currently have coming out through Image, a book of its time. An interesting spin on the real world through comics, and telling some really cool stories. I think you, Brian Wood, Azzarello. I mean, there's just a group, Jason Aaron. You know, there's a group of creators out there that bring the real world to their comics in a way that others don't. And I think Nightly News is a great place for people to start who might be listening to this, didn't hear our last interview.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. That's like the only trade I've got out.
Yeah, but
it feels
it's,
like, it feels like right. I should have more trades out than that, but it's just everything's going to hit all at once. I think I'm probably going to have like three trades come out here in December and January. So.
Well, that's cool. That's great. You know, well, as you say, it's only been 2 years, and it's been a busy 2 years.
Sure. Well, I mean, that book got me every other gig I got, so obviously it worked for that, if for any other reason. People seem to like it, so.
It's a great story. I highly recommend people checking that out, and also a good introduction to your kind of design and storytelling as seen in Pax Romana specifically, and even, you know, to a degree as well in Red Mass and Transhuman. Although those are a bit more conventional, and I really do. I look forward to your Marvel work, how that's going to translate. It's fun seeing Fraction inside of the corporate story that, you know, he and Brubaker told in Iron Fist and that he's telling now in Punisher War Journal, but the voice was still there. And I think it's going to be interesting seeing that with your stuff and how it translates into, you know, for lack of a better word, the house style as far as, you know, the framework.
We'll see. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting year. I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, I think we're gonna get to see really quick whether or not I can flourish in that environment or not, and I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so because I'm excited about the volume of and the level of you know project that I'm getting to work on. So,
well, very cool, John. I was really excited in Chicago when I heard the announcement at the Marvel.
Yeah, PR. Yeah, you called me. That was awesome. Thank you for that.
It was my pleasure, man. Because like I said, I enjoyed Nightly News. I've enjoyed what I've read so far. And hearing that you and Brian were working together on this Nick Fury book, it would only, to me, it was a great choice. And really looking forward to Secret Warriors and the culmination of these other Image books that are coming up and their eventual trades. So once we get into Secret Warriors, you'll come back, hopefully, and sure. We'll talk a little bit more and get into more things.
That would be peachy.
Thanks, man.
Certainly.
That's John Hickman. Make sure you check out the Nightly News trade. And coming near the end of the year, you'll see trades from Image Comics for Transhuman, Pax Romana, and Red Mass for Mars. And then debuting in 2009, out of the ashes of Secret Invasion, Secret Warriors from Marvel Comics. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. Of course, we're at Newsarama.com. We're at wordballoon.com as well, where you can find our archive of various past episodes. Any questions or comments about the show? You can either check out our message board. The link is there at wordballoon.com. You can email me, john@wordballoon.com. And if you have any reviews or suggestions you'd like to make for the various podcatcher sites like iTunes, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, we welcome your input. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.